Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further, faster. Today, we are talking about how to become a student rather than a critic of new ideas that surface in your organization. First, we will listen to a portion of one of Andy's talks entitled Random Thoughts on Leadership. Afterwards, Andy will spend some time with us unpacking this idea a little further.
This quote has hung in my office for 9, maybe 10 years. The next generation product almost never comes from the previous generation. The next generation product almost never comes from the previous generation. This is from Al Reese's book, Focus. It's not a Christian book. It's a business book that we read. We spent almost a year in this book as a staff. I highly recommend it. It's been out for a long time. It's a marketing book, but it's on focus. And in there, this is from a longer quote, but he says, the next generation product, and he's talking about products. And his point is this. The next thing that's going to capture the imagination and fascination of the consumer, the next thing is going to come from the next generation. It's not going to come from the previous generation. So in my notes, I wrote this down. This is why what some of you are doing is far more important than what we're doing. Because you're 25 years old and you're messing with ministry around the edges and you don't have 1,000 people, but you are figuring out and have figured out the next generation of what ministry is going to look like. I hate to break it to me, I'm not going to figure that out. In fact, I'm going to look at what you're doing and going, that's not going to work. First time I saw somebody texting, I thought, who is going to do that? And then I finally learned, and I've got staff that Twitter now. And just as I was about to say, that's really probably going to catch on, and I'll be doing it in a few years too, right? Because my generation, and I'm not that old, and a lot of your generation, look, we're not going to figure out what's next. But here's what we know, because we've been around long enough to know, something's next, and chances are the next generation's going to figure it out, which means those of us that are in my generation, we have a responsibility to the next generation. And see, when I did, and many of you have this experience, and some of you in youth ministry are having it right now, when I was a youth pastor, I thought I knew what was next, and everybody told me I was crazy, and I thought I was knew what was next, and we had a deacon's meeting to decide that it wasn't next. Honestly, there was a deacon's meeting and I was invited and they had a meeting about what I thought was next and they all agreed, it ain't next, it ain't happening. And I just remember being so frustrated. And one of the reasons I'm happy to have had that experience is I have to just close my mouth sometimes and just gear back and remember, Andy, somewhere on the fringes of maybe this organization, somewhere in the fringes of church world, somebody's figuring out what's next. And Andy, you have the choice. You can fight it or you can fund it. You can fight it and a few years from now go, you are kidding, that caught on? Or you can fund it and say, you know what, I wasn't smart enough to think about it, but I had a big church with a bunch of resources and we took a risk and we funded it and we lost some money. But you know what? Those leaders were able to go further, faster, because those of us who don't have great ideas anymore, we had all the resources. And we were smart enough not to do to the next generation what the previous generation did to some of us, right? And let me say this too. If you're 25 years old, enjoy your day in the sun. I'm serious. Just eat it up. Love it. Enjoy looking at people like me or people older than you and going, they don't get it. Just soak it up. And one day you're going to be 45 and you're going to be looking at 25-year-olds going, oh. And I just hope, you know what I hope for you? I hope you are currently in an environment where the 45-year-olds and the 55-year-olds come up to you and say, son, I don't understand it. I don't like it. And I don't get it, but we're going to fund it. If you think that's next, I'm smart enough to know that the next generation of ministry ain't coming from the previous generation. And I'm going to leverage my influence with the people my age in this organization to give you freedom. And if you screw up and if you embarrass me and you lose money, you come on in. We'll pray about it and we'll figure out what we're going to do next. Because if I'm going to have a legacy, my legacy as a leader is not going to be I rained on everybody's parade because I thought my parade was the only parade in town and they finally had a funeral for me and they were glad I was gone. I want my legacy, and you too do. We want our legacy to be, oh my gosh, they got behind some of the craziest, most radical, most expensive, most out there ideas in the world, and 8 out of 10 of them were a total failure. But I'll tell you one thing about her, I'll tell you one thing about him. They were forward-thinking leaders that were so committed to God's kingdom, they were willing to risk failure, they were willing to risk their reputation, they were willing to risk their own legacy, they were willing to risk everything for the sake of reaching a generation that nobody else was reaching, because they were smart enough to know that the next generation ideas are not coming from the previous generation. That's why you and I have got to pay attention to student ministry, because whether we like it or not, what's happening right now in student ministry is going to happen in big church one day. If you don't believe me, take a look. Right? When I was a student minister, we had off-screen and off-projector. And we were like so happy. And remember, some of you have been there, and the adults would come stand in the back of the student ministry thing going, boy, I wish big church was like this. Little did I know, one day it would be, you know? It's not because I'm smart. It's just because that's the way the world works. So guys, hey, give your student ministry more rope. Yeah, they're going to make mistakes. They're going to break things and screw things up. I guarantee you they are. I promise they are. But hey, that's okay. You can be so careful, you're behind. You can be so cautious, you're irrelevant. If you're not going to get it perfect, so if you're going to lean one way or the other, let's just remember, Al Reese is right. The next generation product almost never comes from the previous generation. It comes from the next generation. You need to create somewhere in your organization, if you can, the fertile soil for the next generation of ministry, the next generation to pop up. Here's the takeaway. Be a student, not a critic. Be a student, not a critic. You need to be a student of Emergent. You need to be a student of House Church. You need to be a student of mega church. Some of you are here and you had to take a deep breath and you've held your nose for 2.5 days because you're in a mega church. Because you just don't like mega church. And that's okay, but you know what? You're here. You've become a student. Be a student, not a critic. I'll never forget, because I'm old enough to remember this. Some of you, this is irrelevant, but I remember when Bill Hybels and Willow Creek first came crashing onto the scenes, and I'm Southern Baptist, and this isn't Southern Baptist Church, but I was raised Southern Baptist, and I guess you always got some of it in you. And so, which is all right. I really am very grateful for my heritage. And I remember when he first came on the scenes, I can still remember the big Southern Baptist gurus, how critical they were. I mean, they weren't willing to learn anything. They wouldn't go. They wouldn't attend the conference. They wouldn't listen to the CDs. They wouldn't listen to the tapes. They would hear bits and pieces of something, say, well, I hear they don't give an invitation. Like, what else do you know? That's all I know. They don't give an invitation. So you're going to like write the whole thing off. And they would hear rumors and they would put all the bits and pieces together and come up with a perspective. And you know what happened? Come on. What happened? All the middle-aged guys and up, I don't know about that. All the young guys would kind of shake their head in front of the old guys, and then they ran out and copied everything Bill Hybels did, right? And then what happens? The older generation, they just become irrelevant because they're just critics, 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 and they never learned anything, most of them. Let's not do that. When something new comes on the scene, before you criticize, become a student. Read, be open. The only non-negotiable thing, honestly, now, and again, this is just my opinion. In fact, this whole talk is pretty much just my opinion. So the only real non-negotiable when it comes right down to it is this. Jesus said it. You read it for yourself and read it in this context. You know, Jesus was talking to the disciples and he said, and this is a question you can't ask. Only Jesus could ask this question. He said, guys, who do people say I am? What's the word on the street about me? Try that sometime. You know, that anyway, only Jesus could do that. And they said, and this is cool, they all believe in reincarnation. We think you're John the Baptist, some think you're John the Baptist, some think you're Elisha. Then you know this passage. Jesus said, okay, well, who do you think I am? You've seen all this stuff. Tell me who I am. I'm telling you, this little piece of scripture is bigger than we give it credit. And Peter said, I'll tell you who I think you are. I think you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then Jesus made a very, very important statement. He said, Peter, on this, I'm going to build the whole thing. That's it. Now, Catholics say it's Peter. Here's how we know what Jesus meant. The way you know what Jesus meant is by what happened. And the thing that holds the church together all over the world is this statement, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. Everything else we can argue about. Everything else we might need to debate. But the thing that holds it all together is Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And as long as that is what a person is willing to die for, be open to what they're doing, because the next generation of effective ministry is not coming from the previous generation. Be a student, not a critic. Once you're a student, then you can become a critic.
Well, Andy, as you mentioned in the clip, we're constantly being bombarded with new products, new technologies. And with that always comes a little bit of skepticism. Can you give us an example of a next generation ministry or ministry idea that you were originally skeptical about?
Yeah, I can tell you about two. First, believe it or not, I was very skeptical about video venue church or multi-site church. And we had been doing, had a video environment here on our campus, but you know, we're on the same campus. The idea of building a campus around video preaching, honestly, Evan, in the back of my mind, you know, we're spending all this money creating this environment. I kept thinking, well, worst case scenario, after the novelty of this wears off and nobody's showing up anymore, we can always get a preacher and have like a real preacher there and make this work. And I was so grateful that we were able to experiment with that in a grocery store, a leased facility, before we went off and, you know, built an entire campus around it. So I was very skeptical. But, you know, the general consensus was this will work, and if we support it with all the other live environments that a typical church has, we can make it work. But I went a little bit kicking and screaming. A more recent example is when I first heard about what Craig Groeschel was doing with an online community and an online church, essentially. You know, my first thought was, again, that's novel, but that people aren't going to stick to that. That doesn't really have legs long term. But fortunately, I took my own advice and I wasn't critical, and I went and became a student of that. And you know, it would be easy to sit at a conference room table and just go on and on and on about how that's a bad idea and all the problems with that biblically and theologically, which you know people do about multi-site as well. But instead, you know, I actually sat down one Saturday night and experienced the online community and the online service with Life Church, and it was incredible. And one of our staff guys here has been for about 6 months exploring what we would need to do to create that online community. And even when he would talk about it, I would think, you know, I don't know. You know, does that really have any longevity? But once I experienced it, I'm thinking, absolutely. But again, you know, these are two pretty big initiatives where I was kind of the last one to buy in. But fortunately, I'm surrounded by some pretty progressive thinking people who I have opened myself up to and said, you know what, I'm going to trust you in arenas where I don't have expertise, and I'm going to trust you to guide me. And then, you know, if things go the wrong way, I mean, we can always pull out. But I don't want to sit back and refuse to engage and refuse to consider something just because I don't understand it.
Well, and that's one of the problems or one of the hurdles is oftentimes the skepticism breeds controversy. And so when you start to evaluate these ideas, what are some ways to go after that controversial next generation idea when you have those in the organization or those that influence the organization that want to maintain the status quo?
Yeah, that's a really big question. And basically what you're asking is, you know, how does a leader implement change? Mm-hmm. In the face of we don't want to change, or within an organization that hasn't changed in a long time. And the kind of simple big picture answer to that is this: change must always be introduced if it's going to happen. Change should always be introduced within the context of vision. In other words, here's what God's called us to do. Here's the mountain we're going to climb. Here's why we're here. Here's our purpose. Here's our mission. And so change needs to be a means to an end. And one of the mistakes that church leaders make is, you know, we look at what First Methodist is doing down the street or First Presbyterian or the community church, and they have some new cool thing going on. And the temptation is just to run down there, steal their ideas, and copy it. But that's not a vision. And so churches try to implement contemporary services or change the music just for the sake of change. But for change to become part of a culture, it has to be a means to an end, which means it has to be a strategic step toward accomplishing something that's vision-oriented. So I say to leaders all the time, before you introduce your new great idea and your, you know, your big, giant change, you need to cast a very, very compelling vision, a vision that's so compelling people are like, you know, we've got to do this. And then you say, well, you know what? One way that we can do this is by making this change. One way that we can, you know, move the ball down the field in this area where we've all bought into is by rethinking the way we do children's ministry, rethinking the way we do high school ministry, rethinking what happens on Sunday morning in our auditorium. So again, you know, vision first, change second. If you get those two in reverse, then you just have long committee meetings. The other thing, Evan, when it comes to implementing change, is generally speaking, a leader should know or be able to guess where the resistance is going to come from. I doubt very seriously the average pastor or church leader is surprised by resistance to their new ideas, and I doubt they're very surprised by where the resistance comes from. Now, there are exceptions to that. So with that in mind, one of the things I tell leaders, and I did this all wrong early on. I mean, this is where I really, really wish I would have taken the advice I'm about to give, but I'd never been told. You know, I was young and dumb, is once a leader can anticipate, okay, this family, this group of people, this demographic, this individual, this level of leadership, when they can anticipate where the resistance is going to come from, one of the smartest things a leader can do is to begin the conversation with that group. And I've done this on several occasions, and I'll give you an example in just a minute. But essentially to go in and say, okay, here's something I'm thinking about. I haven't talked about this with anyone yet, so now I'm honoring you as a leader. I'm anticipating that this may be something that you would have questions about. So before I go public with this, I wanted to just throw this out and get your input. Well, now, this isn't a way to manipulate. This is a way to say, I would love for you to buy into my idea. I realize you have questions. I know you enough and respect you enough to know that your resistance is worth something for me to consider and something I should consider. And so when we begin with the group from which we can expect the resistance, essentially we've begun vision casting at maybe the most important level in the organization. When we started North Point, I really, really, really wanted to have one Sunday a year where we shut the whole church down. And the reason I did, having grown up in church and having worked in church for so long, the pace is almost unsustainable. I mean, here comes Sunday, here comes Sunday, here comes Sunday, here comes Sunday. It's just constant, not just for the one communicating, but for volunteers, for people in children's ministry, student ministry. It's almost an unsustainable pace. So I looked at the calendar year and I thought, which Sunday in the year is really the dead Sunday? It's the Sunday where you really almost have to manufacture energy for even going to church at all. And it was that Sunday following Christmas. Christmas is such a busy time. The pace is even kind of amped up from just the normal, you know, pace of church. And so I thought, what would it be like if we just shut down all of our campuses? At that time, we just had one. What if we shut down everything the Sunday after Christmas? So I remember talking to Sandra about it, and she's like we just wouldn't go. I said, no, the church would be closed on a Sunday. And so after she got over the initial shock and realized, wow, that'd be kind of fun, a guiltless Sunday to stay at home. Plus, after Christmas, you know, there's family, there's travel. So then I thought, who is not going to like this idea? I knew the staff would love it. That wasn't going to be a hard right. sell, right? They weren't going to be, no, we want a Sunday work. I knew that people with young families, they're going to love this idea because they're not going to come anyway. I mean, the kids, you know, especially if Sunday falls close to Christmas. There was a group in our church that I felt like this will be a hard sell for that group. And so I went to the men specifically that I perceived to be the influencers with that group, and I pitched this idea to them first. I said, I've got a radical idea. This doesn't even sound religious or spiritual. And I tried to say to them what I thought they were going to think because I understood why they would be against this. And we had a great conversation. And I was surprised at how quickly they kind of nodded their heads and kind of caught the vision of, you know, it's honoring to the volunteers, it's honoring to the staff, it's honoring to families. We say to people, go to a different church. You know, we're not, you know, we're doing church the rest of this year. It's not like we're anti-church. And in a relatively short conversation, two conversations actually with two different groups, there was buy-in. So then when I went back to the larger group and said, hey, we've had this idea, when I went to the elders, in fact, one of the gentlemen I'd met with was an elder at the time, and I just thought, here's a guy who, you know, he's a very traditional person. You know, I don't want to introduce this idea to him in a meeting. I just thought that's a bad idea. So again, the point of all this is anticipate where the resistance is going to come from. Maybe start there. That's honoring to them. You get their feedback. You get their objections first. You're not going to win everyone, but at least start there, because that's a great way to introduce the idea of change. Instead of standing up in front of dozens or hundreds of people, casting a vision, and then sending everybody home and back to their cars to kind of analyze your great idea, you know, without all the information that they necessarily need to understand if it's a great idea or not. So,
right, because you're always going to have a critic. There's always going to be critics.
Yeah, I mean, but generally you can guess who they are.
Yeah.
And there's going to be people outside your organization, but whether they buy in or not is almost, not completely, it's almost irrelevant. But there's some insiders, some core people who really love God, love you, love the church. You know, they just need to understand and have more information than the average person. And as leaders, we are wise to start the conversation or begin the conversation with that group of people.
On that same thread, I want to go back to something that you mentioned a few minutes ago, and also something that you mentioned in the clip that I think is important to talk about here. And this is how we transition from being a critic to really being a student. Mm-hmm. What are some practical ways to be a student rather than a critic?
Well, this is a really important question, and there's more to this question than the question. I think the reason oftentimes that people in general, and maybe especially leaders, one of the reasons that we immediately go into critic mode versus student mode is because of our own insecurity. There's a general principle that says this: people are going to be against things that they don't understand and they can't control. That generally I'm going to resist anything that I don't understand because it's threatening to me. It's threatening to the way I see the world. It's threatening to the way I see ministry. It's threatening to the way I see preaching. It's threatening to the way I see student ministry. You know, anything I don't understand is threatening, so I resist it. So there's a tendency to be critical of anything I don't understand and things I can't control. Well, because that's true, if a leader will embrace that and realize, wait a minute, the reason I'm tempted to resist this or critique this has nothing to do with it, whatever it is. It has more to do with me. So as leaders, if we can find the security within ourselves to take a deep breath and say, okay, I'm not going to be a critic. I'm going to be a student. In fact, before I say anything critical about this church, this idea, this new technology, this new curriculum, this new preaching style, this new worship style, whatever it is, before I say anything critical, I want to understand it. I want to be able to explain it to someone else. In fact, I want to be able to argue a case for this before I become a critic of it. If we'll do that, then we have a more accurate filter for really filtering out the bad ideas. At the same time, we'll have a better filter for allowing good ideas in without reverting, you know, to criticizing things to death.
Andy, you just mentioned something that was really important, the idea of evaluating ideas, whether they're good or bad. How can you identify the best ideas coming from the next generation, given the limited resources that exist to pursue new ideas?
Well, one of the things that I infer in this talk is that within an organization, leaders should be on the lookout for next generation ideas within their organization. But in reality, the next generation ideas are probably not going to come from our organizations. So this isn't a matter of having all this research and development money that we've, you know, given to our student ministry or our college ministry going, hey, here's tens of thousands of dollars, go try some things, and we're going to sit on the sidelines and watch and see if any of these things work. What's probably going to happen is that these good ideas are going to happen outside our organization. So part of being a student versus a critic is being a student of what other people are doing, not only in other churches, but in other parachurch ministries, in other businesses and or other organizations, keeping our ear to the ground and listening carefully, you know, for those new ideas, because they're going to happen on the fringes. They may happen within our organization. They may happen within another church in our city, but they may happen in another country. So the great news is this isn't about spending lots and lots of money and wasting a lot of time trying a whole bunch of things and hoping something sticks. It's more a matter of paying attention to people who are working on the fringes of student ministry, the fringes of college ministry, the fringes of really any kind of ministry, trying new things. Let them kind of pay the price. Let them take the arrows, you know, let them be the pioneers. But when something begins to work and something begins to gain traction, as a leader, it's my responsibility to say, okay, we may not do it exactly that way. We may not understand exactly why they're doing what they're doing, but they're beginning to get traction with high school students in a way we're not. They're beginning to get traction in the area of groups or small groups in a way that maybe we're not. They're beginning to get traction in an area where maybe we're not. So let's learn everything we can from them. So the point being, we're not simply, this isn't simply a matter of looking within our organization at things people are trying. It's a matter of looking everywhere.
Yeah, one of the things that I love to hear, the term is that early adopter idea.
Yeah.
That we may not be the first, but we see something that's happening in another community. We want to be an early adopter.
Yeah, we want to be early adopters in some cases, and we want to be adapters because, again, nothing works for everyone the way it works for everyone else. And so part of being a leader is saying, you know, what can we pick and choose? But let's don't be so committed to just our way of doing things that we miss an opportunity. And we struggle with this a little bit as a large church. Oftentimes there's a sense of if we didn't create it and we didn't make it up, we don't want to do it. It all has to be our idea. And that's dangerous as well because eventually, you know, there are going to be great ideas that happen outside our sphere of influence. And if we are really committed to our vision and mission, we're going to open up and say, you know what, we didn't come up with this, but we certainly are going to adopt it, and give credit where credit is due.
And part of that, Andy, is a culture thing. It's establishing a culture that is accepting of new ideas.
Yeah.
How do you create an organizational culture and structure that does that?
Well, one of the things you have to do, Evan, and we've all had to learn this at North Point, is you have to be able to create conversations that stay focused on the what and stay away from the how. The how people will kill every good idea. And by how person, somebody says, I've got this idea, and the how person says, well, how are we going to pay for it? How are we going to get volunteers? How are we going to tell people about it? How? Well, you can how every single good idea to death. So one of the main things you have to do in a culture that's committed to generating new ideas and trying new things is you have to create conversations that are a little bit how-free, where the leader says, okay, wait, we are not going to talk about a strategy for implementing. Let's just talk about, is this a good idea? Is there potential behind this good idea? So essentially, it's creating a safety zone for those conversations. The other thing is you have to have a culture where failure is not criticized, when it's possible, that failure is actually celebrated. Because in a healthy organization, when there's a failure, it's because somebody was trying something that hadn't been done before. You rarely fail doing the things that you do every week and do well. But when there's a failure, it's generally because somebody was experimenting, they went out on the edge a little bit, they did something at a different time, they tried to reach a different people group, you know, they tried something different. Well, if you criticize people who are failing on the fringes, everybody's going to move away from the fringes and move right back to the very, very predictable center. So when possible, a leader needs to make failure an object lesson in a positive way, celebrate failure when it can be celebrated, because then that motivates people, again, to think outside the lines and try different things. So in terms of creating a culture that's open to new ideas, those are two things. And then the other thing I think is for people in my position, point leaders, to give credit where credit is due outside the organization, whether it's a sermon illustration, something that simple. People from time to time will preach our messages, and they'll actually give us credit. And what that says to their organization is this: it's okay to utilize and adapt and adopt, as we talked about before, other ideas from other organizations if we think it will make this organization better. We're not afraid to bring new ideas and new people in. So every time you do that and celebrate that and let that be known throughout the organization, that becomes comfortable to the culture of the organization, and I think ultimately it shapes the way the organization thinks and feels.
In summary, what would you say to those that represent the previous generation and to those who feel like they represent the next generation leader?
Wow, to the previous generation, and it's hard to admit, you know, you're in the previous generation. We don't know when we wake up and we're in the previous generation. But for that group that looks around, everybody's 15 or 20 years younger than them in their organization, that's a key. Our responsibility is to fuel the energy and fund the new ideas and to be a champion of the people that are coming along behind us and give them opportunities. In fact, we need to be willing to risk our reputation on their efforts, our legacy on their efforts. My dad did that for me. I still can't believe that when I was 27, he asked me to fill in for him when I was a youth pastor. And every time he was out of town, he let me preach. And I preached some really bad sermons. I look back and I said some things that should never have been said. I don't even believe those things anymore. I'm sure he didn't even believe them at the time, or he certainly wasn't sure. But he risked his reputation and, in a sense, his legacy and his pulpit and his platform by giving me an opportunity to fill in for him. And I feel like that's my responsibility. That's the responsibility of, you know, my current generation. For those men and women who feel like they're part of the next generation, two things. Number one, the things that you tend to criticize about the current generation are things that you will understand better when you're in leadership someday. As a student pastor, I looked at the things that they did in our Baptist church, and I would think, what are they thinking? And now that I'm the they in this church, I understand more and more of why they did what they did. So number one, remember that. And number two, learn for the next generation, learn to be a great follower. I'm absolutely convinced of this, Evan. The better follower a person learns to be, the better leader they will be when they're in leadership. I'm absolutely convinced of that. The person that never learned to follow is, generally speaking, a very detached, insensitive leader. But the man or woman who learned to work under authority and to view that God was working through their authorities to lead them, when a person understands that and learns to relax and settle in under authority, when they become an authority, I feel like they're a much better authority, a more trustworthy authority, somebody who's very much more in tune with the emotions and the feelings and the desires of the people that are coming along behind them.
That's huge. Andy, thanks so much for sitting down today. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast. For more information, please visit us at northpoint.org. Also, visit northpointresources.org to purchase the Drive 08 Session MP3 that covers this topic, and to find other leadership resources from Andy Stanley.